This story of Zacchaeus is a good story to be looking at in the West End of London. So this is a city story. And we could say that Zacchaeus represented the unacceptable face of capitalism. But it's also not just a city story, but also a gospel story. But let's think for a moment about the context. It all happened in Jericho. It was a beautiful city, but a crowded city. It was full of palms, but it teemed with snakes. Perhaps you remember that parable Jesus told about the Good Samaritan, where the priest and the Levite who passed the mugged man had been on their way to Jericho. Jericho was, in a very real sense, a world in miniature. It had the beautiful and the ugly. It had the cold clerics and the pious men of God. It had the exploited and the exploited. It had goodness and vice. In effect, it was just like London. But let's look at this passage together. Will you notice, please, first today, a very lost man. Look at verse 2, will you? A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. What a terrible, trivial description of a person. Zacchaeus, the chief tax collector, and was wealthy. Wouldn't it be terrible when you died if all it said about you was your job and that you were wealthy? And of course, tax collectors were hated for two reasons. First reason, they were traitors to the Romans who occupied Palestine. The second reason was that they made their living by taking a cut of the taxes, and therefore they overcharged. And if you like, they were squeezing their own fellow countrymen. And here was Zacchaeus, not just unpopular, but very unpopular, because he wasn't just a tax collector, but as the passage says, he was a chief tax collector. And no doubt he was doing very well for himself. He was wealthy, he had a nice home, perhaps he had that wall-to-wall, that deep pile carpet. He had servants trapped in the drive, there's the equivalent of a Daimler and a Porsche. He had a gorgeous wife, perhaps, and four children. But actually Zacchaeus going home couldn't escape his own emptiness and his own sort of inner painfulness. Because actually he'd be sitting in his sitting room one night and lounging in the city. He'd look up and see that chandelier and he'd think to himself, oh yes, I got that chandelier as a part of a tax sought out with someone. Or perhaps another time he would be walking up the stairs and he'd see some paintings on the staircase. And he'd think, oh yes, I got those paintings from that widow who I taxed. You see, even his own home couldn't give him any escape from his inner emptiness and failure. He was rich, but dissatisfied. And worse still, he was a social outcast. You see, Zacchaeus was a very lost man, and yet wonderfully, Jesus was concerned for him. And of course, calls him by name, says Zacchaeus. You see, Jesus knew all about him, a lost man in a city, and Jesus cared for him. So a very lost man, but also second, will you notice, a very little turning point in verse 3. Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. Now, of course, Jesus was often called the friend of the tax collectors. And Zacchaeus had probably heard in the grapevine, but here was somebody who actually would be a friend to them, would get alongside them, would welcome them. Do you remember how Levi had been converted to follow Christ? He was a tax collector. Perhaps a fax had arrived in Zacchaeus' office saying, Zacchaeus, look out for this man Jesus, because he actually takes an interest in us. You see, at last there's a rare hope for Zacchaeus. There he was in his own lostness, with his own emptiness painfully forced in on him. And he finds a little turning point. He seeks to find out more about Jesus. And verse 3, it's mere curiosity. Fascinating, isn't it? He wanted to see who Jesus was. So he wanders off to find out more about him. And then look at verse 4, will you? Zacchaeus ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see Jesus, since Jesus was coming that way. And can you imagine the indignity of that? Zacchaeus, as it were, the equivalent of a city gent, clambering up a lamppost and hanging from it to get a sight of Jesus. But doesn't life often turn on small things? Yes, for Zacchaeus, it was curiosity. But I wonder, in your own life, perhaps in friendships or where you've got jobs, it's almost seem a very small little turning point which has led you in a certain direction. The same happens on the Christian front as well. I guess there are people here today who perhaps walked past All Souls and then suddenly seen the notice board outside and thought, well yes, I'll come and find out more about the Christian faith. Or perhaps a friend in the office who's a Christian believer has invited you along, perhaps many months ago, and subsequently you've decided to trust and follow Jesus Christ. Or perhaps you've been on a business trip and you felt pretty fed up with life. You felt lost. And there's a Gideon's Bible in the little side table. And you've begun to read it. And you found yourself inextricably drawn to Jesus Christ. You see, very often, it's little turning points which actually push us towards Jesus Christ. If you're somebody who, coming along to these lunchtime services, has, as it were, come in through a little turning point, make sure you follow it through. If you're somebody who's just investigated the Christian faith tour, make sure that perhaps you go to Christianity Explained or ask more from Rika or myself or a Christian friend. A very lost man. A very little turning point. And then a very powerful God. Look at verses 5 and 6, will you? When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So Zacchaeus came down at once and welcomed him gladly. You see, God is in control, and he does as he chooses. And so we have here Jesus, who unasked stops, who unasked speaks, who unasked demands hospitality, and unasked changes Zacchaeus' life. There's been things in the papers last week about patients being turned away, haven't there, from hospitals, where actually there's no beds for them, or they're seen as total non-starters. Well, hospitals may ignore or discharge those who are incurable, but not Jesus. Here's a social outcast, lost, aware of his need, and yet Jesus cares and goes up to him and says, Zacchaeus, and calls him to follow him. You see, in the drama of life, when Zacchaeus seems to be standing alone on the stage, carrying on, at least internally, a despairing monologue, another one comes and joins him in the play. A very little man, a very little turning point, a very powerful God who can transform the lives of people like Zacchaeus, of people like us. And fourth, a very urgent call. Do you notice verse 1? Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. You see, Jesus wasn't staying long. And then Jesus goes up to him in verse 5, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So Zacchaeus came down at once and welcomed him gladly. I wonder if there might be somebody here today who perhaps over years or months, or perhaps in the last few days, you felt God's call on your life in some way. If you like, you've heard him sort of knocking at the door of your life, asking you to respond. Well, don't ignore that urgent call, because actually your death will bring opportunity to an end, and perhaps other things will crowd in, and you'll never have a chance again. A story is told about the Devil University, and three little devils, undergraduates, do their finals, and they answer a question in their finals about how best to mislead human beings. And they come up with different reasons and best things to use against men and women. And one of the little devils gets a third. And he says, what I'm going to argue is that there's no God. That's what I'm going to tell those who live on the earth. A third class degree for him, no God. Another little devil gets a second class degree. And he argues that there's no such thing as sin. And that's what he says to human beings. But then there's a little devil who gets a starred first. He doesn't say there's no God. He doesn't say there's no such thing as sin. He simply says to men and women, there's no hurry. You see, there is an urgent call when it comes to considering the gospel and Jesus Christ. And it'd be tragic if you're preoccupied with the present things, you ignore Jesus' call, and you lose eternity, and you plunge in to a Christless eternity. A very little man, a very little turning point, a very powerful God, a very urgent call. And then fifth, a very definite stand. You see, Zacchaeus was an obvious sinner. He was a social outcast. He seemed an absolute non-starter. You would never have thought that God had anything to do with him. Again and again, people have felt that, haven't they? But there's no hope for them in their situation, the way they've lived. I think of D.H. Lawrence, the novelist, who said this about Christianity. He said this, I quote, "Christianity is bound to fail. No inspiration whatsoever will get weak, impotent, worthless, and rebellious man beyond his own limits." Pretty pessimistic view to have. But how wrong Lawrence was. Now, we're not sure what Jesus said to Zacchaeus, or Zacchaeus said to Jesus. But Zacchaeus showed after that conversation that he was under new management. Look quickly at verse 8. "But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, 'Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I cheat anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount.'" You see, he's willing to respond to the call of Jesus Christ. It wasn't a resolve to do something about it in the future. Rather, no, he said, "I'll do something in the present, now." And what was the issue? Well, actually, it was obedience, wasn't it? And so often for us, the issue is obedience. Will I be obedient to what Jesus says? Will I let him, as it were, be my prime minister? Will I let him rule over my life? But notice also, will you? Let's be realistic. But being a Christian is a hassle. You see, Zacchaeus had to make amends, didn't he, to those he'd robbed. He had to go public on his newfound Lord, that he was following Jesus Christ. And I'd be wrong to say to you that there's not hassle in following Jesus Christ. But oh, how worthwhile it is. And what happens to Zacchaeus? Well, the moment he invites Jesus in to his life, to rule his life, Lord Jesus comes and answers his deepest needs. Do you notice verses 9 and 10? Jesus said to Zacchaeus, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is the son of Abraham. The Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." Amazingly, isn't it, in this story, a grasping, self-centered tax collector becomes a generous disciple of Jesus. And instead, he lives a life of sacrificial service. I wonder how you react to this story of Zacchaeus, the tax collector. Or perhaps you might react as some did in verse 7. All the people saw. They saw that Zacchaeus had gone with Jesus and Jesus had gone to his home. And they said, or they muttered, "He's gone," verse 7, "to be the guest of a sinner." Ah, but that's people Jesus comes for. He's come for people who know their life is a mess. They've mucked up. So if your life is a dustbin, if you're aware of the rubbish and failure and mess of your life, your rebellion, well, actually Jesus walked this earth. He died on a cross for you. But perhaps the others of us who are hard-hearted, we say, "Well, actually, I'm okay. I've always lived a fairly sort of good life. I don't actually believe it." But actually, that has that, because you're ignoring the purpose which Jesus came, to save sinners, to save people like you and I. And then another challenge in this passage. But Zacchaeus responded. And how much more should you and I respond? You see, Zacchaeus knew much less than you and I know. We live after the death of Jesus on the cross for us, after his resurrection. We have a New Testament ourselves to read. We can explore the Christian faith in all its glory. But Zacchaeus was willing to respond to what he knew. How much more should you and I? What's true faith? Well, true faith is a response to Jesus, to obey him to obey the one who came to seek and save the lost. I wonder, have you done that? Is that the gospel you believe in yourself? Have you trusted Christ and begun to follow him?